Welcome everyone in to the B-Section Podcast, brought to you by the Daily Review and the Morning Times. I'm Kirk Loveson, joined as always by Logan Hill and David Goff. We got plenty of football action to get into, some other local sports as well, and then we'll talk the national sports scene to end this episode. But before we do any of that, let's hear our sponsor.
Today's podcast is being brought to you by the Jolly Farmer Convenience Store in Waverly. When you think about convenience, think about the Jolly Farmer, again, in Waverly. From the supersized selection of microbrewery beers to the bakery and grocery items, even lottery tickets and that pick-me-up cup of coffee. I talked about it last week. We're in frigid temperature season. Like, I need that pick-me-up cup
definitely
of coffee
now,
sometimes.
Right?
So that's at the Jolly Farmer. They have it all for you there. 7 Elizabeth Street in Waverly. It's open 7 days a week, and it is the only convenience store that sponsors us that David has not gotten a hot chocolate at yet.
So let's get into this. As quickly as football season gets here, it seems to go by just as quickly, doesn't it?
I can't believe it. We're coming up on week 9 of the regular season schedule in PA.
We are getting
not far behind in New York.
Yeah, we are getting close to rivalry week, which means we're getting close to the postseason. So let's recap some of the action that went down this past weekend. Athens over Wyalusing in an interesting outcome, 29-13. We kind of talked last week, this might be the game of the week. We didn't know which way to kind of lean. The Wildcats are the ones who get it done again, David, 29-13. What'd you think?
Impressive performance from Athens in that one. They Wyalusing did get off to a 7-0 start, but they would then muff a punt that Athens took all the momentum from in that first half. So 7-0, and then after that muff punt, the very first play was a 28-yard pass from Connor Davidson to Adam Kemp in the end zone, tie the game 7-7. The Athens defense got after it after that, and it was all of a sudden 20-7 Athens with two Connor Davidson runs of 31 yards and 53 yards. It was 20-7 late in the second quarter, 20-13 at halftime. And then Wyalusing didn't score the rest of the game. It was 20-13 for most of the third quarter, and then kind of a weird play where Wyalusing was set to punt, and they did punt the ball from inside their own 5-yard line. But there was a flag on the play, and Athens had the choice. Like, do we want to have them re-kick the ball, or do we want to just take the ball 5 yards forward from where we return the ball? There was some debate and some argument on the Athens sideline what they wanted to do. They ended up saying, let's punt the ball again. Let's have Wyalusing punt the ball again from their own end zone. And a weird snap was kind of low, and the punter's knee hit the ground. Safety at the very end of the third quarter. It's a 2-possession, 22-13 lead for Athens. They had won the game 29-13 with Davidson having another 50-yard touchdown run.
Big Connor Davidson night.
Yeah, it really was. He had the first two times he was tackled with a ball, he lost 14 yards on it. But after that, he was 15 rushes for 181 yards.
All right.
So pretty big Davidson day, and the defense was really impressive for that one.
I was locked into your story there because when we got to when it was 20-13, I'm looking at the score. I'm like, 29-13 is what I got for the final. How are we going to get here? The safety, that makes total sense now. Homecoming for Sayre didn't go their way. Tawanda comes to town. They win 54-14, Logan.
The second straight week, David and I were both there for a game, so I don't think that lines up like that much the rest of the way.
Yeah, it should be the end of that, right?
It was really just another trip to the Valley for Tawanda where they came in and they just took care of business. So I think the score was 20-0 after one quarter. And
40-0 at half.
It was 40-0 at halftime. There was at one point where it was kind of exactly how the game went, where Tawanda had a big passing play for a touchdown. It comes back because of holding. And so on the next snap, Riley Vanderpool just runs for an 86-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
It was just that kind of night for Tawanda. They were able to get a lot of guys some time down the stretch of the game. And then Sarah figured out how to get into the end zone a couple of times there before the final horn. But just another week of taking care of business with, and before you got in here today, Kirk, David and I actually were talking. Tawanda right now is sitting at the 2 seed in 2A playoff picture for District 4. So 2 games left to play, but like they kind of control their own destiny in terms of whether they host one home game.
Yeah,
maybe
they got a good
another.
Shot.
So
they got a real good shot,
They're going to go down to Tunkhannock. We'll get there. They'll go down to Tunkhannock this week, and then they close with the bronze helmet game. But just another ho-hum kind of night. I think Riley Slider had a big game. He had a rushing touchdown. He had a receiving touchdown, and then he added a pick six to that. So
okay. Let's stay in your territory, Logan, for the next couple games. Canton, they get the win over Wellsboro in It seems like every week Canton is in these high-scoring affairs. This one, they get the W, 46-34 over Wellsboro.
And that was another – it was another
– they're in some big scoring games.
The final score – and that's another thing I said to David is they only play Big 12 football games in Canton this year. So I'm pulling it up right now to give you some more exact numbers. But the headline I went with for this story was Canton tallies tons of big plays, beats Wellsboro. So they needed a win as far as I can remember without having it exactly in front of me. They had lost three straight. They had lost to Montgomery. They had lost to Wanda, and then they fell to – I'm trying to remember. Oh, Wyalusing. So that was a three-straight streak after they – and they had also lost that thriller to Athens earlier this year.
Good
so
bounce back
sitting at 3-4. They got back to 4-4 with the win. And it was a game where they kind of always – I think it was 7-7 early, but from there – Canton always kind of had a lead, but Wellsboro never went away. So they had they got Holden Ward back. He'd been out the last couple of weeks with an injury. And in football, it's not one player that can shift the tide that much, you would really think. But
unless his last name's Ward and you're from Canton.
Ben Fitch had 5 touchdowns total. I think Ward had played a part in 4 touchdowns total. And then Aiden Holcomb had 2 big touchdowns. And Bailey Gardner was their leading rusher, I think, with 88 yards. So let me pull up that exactly for you. So, yeah, Ben Fitch had 163 yards passing, 3 touchdowns on just 9 attempts, 6 of 9. He caught a touchdown as a receiver from Ward, a 71-yard pass play. Because when Ward's back in there, they like to go under center with him, run a little bit of an option game. And so Ward had 78 yards rushing, rushed for 2 touchdowns, caught a 4-yard touchdown, and then threw the 71-yard pass, which was – as a writer, was a fun moment to see. He took the snap, he rolled out, and literally coming up against the sideline, just let it fly for Fitch, who caught it and went the rest of the way. And I actually got to talk to Ben after the game, and he said he's going to put that on his highlight reel, maybe get that out to some coaches.
Put that on Huddle.
His receiver skills. But again, Aiden Holcomb had 2 big catches and some yak to go with it, yards after catch. So it was really, and I liked what I saw out of Griffin Morrell for Wellsboro, too. He's a freshman. Looks like he might be the quarterback for the foreseeable future for the Hornets, but really just a track meet kind of a game, not really many stops. I think if you're Canton, you like to try to bring that number back down. They're going to play Sayre this week at home, their last home game of the year, so you would hope that maybe that's a get-right spot for you because then you got to go to the Big Bad Wolf next week.
Speaking of that Big Bad Wolf, they roll again. Troy over North Penn Mansfield, 56-13. Another 50-burger for the Trojans.
Feels like they have a lot of 8 touchdowns to 2 touchdown wins.
Boy.
They, besides their week 2 win at Dover, which was 8-3, they haven't scored less than 40 points in a game this year.
They're rolling. The question coming into this season, could they repeat the success from last year? Certainly still on track to do so. Looking maybe even better. I think last time I checked, they were either 1 or 2 in the state ranking or district ranking.
Last time I checked, they were 1 in the state. They're top of the district 4-2A leaderboard. They're gonna have a home game. They might have multiple home games. Last year, the way it worked out, the district final game was at home. So I think they played 3 straight at home. I want to say they played like a Hughesville week 1. I could have that wrong, but then they played Lion Mountain the next week, and then the duel with Southern Columbia. So I don't have exact stat numbers from that game, but I do have the scoring summary. Brennan Gilliland had a 52-yard touchdown and a 75-yard touchdown in the first half. Lincoln Kimmix, that's what we'll go with today. Yep. I haven't been able to talk
today's
to him.
Pronunciation.
I haven't been able to get to him and check with him, but he caught 2 touchdowns from Evan Woodward. Mason Smith returned a kick for a touchdown, recovered a fumble. Let me see where else. And then Reed Palmer scored a 3-yard touchdown. He's been kind of a tight end fullback somewhere in the mix for them this year. And then Joseph Fry, a 21-yard touchdown from Spencer Martin, backup quarterback, once the lead was kind of in hand. So just another night where they went out to the NTL West and took care of business and got to come home without a blemish on the record. So they play Central Mountain on the road this week out of conference. But
yeah, not much to say about Central Mountain other than I did pull up 0-8.
So it could be a very reserve, get a lot of guys some time kind of game. But who knows? I mean, that feels like the all-time trap game if you got one week before.
Yeah, that's scary.
The old shoe. So, but Troy is just, I've said it from the first minute we taped this year to, I'll say it again now, they're a wagon.
Yeah.
You can't look ahead in football. You got to show up and play every, you can't really look ahead in any sport, but you got to show up and play every game. But the season starts for them once the district playoffs get rolling because they have not really been, had to be tested so far this year. They go down to Dover for a football showcase and come out with a defense. They've shown that they can do that if they have to, win ugly, win a tight, close game. But other than that, they haven't really had a lot of moments so far with that this year.
No. David, let's jump across the border into New York. Waverly, they were on the road this past weekend. They take care of Dryden pretty handily, 48-0.
Yeah, Waverly, the last couple of weeks, has just been beating teams that they're supposed to beat, and they're doing it the way they're supposed to be doing it. The one real note from that is it was the second straight week that Ben Shaw was 8-for-8 in the passing game. So he's 16 for his last 16, if not a little bit more, going back to the main NFL game. I'm not 100% sure if his last completion there was, or last pass was complete there, but
Mr. Anyway, efficiency, right?
He's like 16 for 16 for 250 yards or whatever. Like,
very impressive. Tioga, rivalry game, Newark Valley on the road. Pretty good, tightly contested game, 32-14. The Tigers take care of business.
Yeah, now. I mean, you're talking about a Tioga team that's off. They're a different team than their three straight championships, but they're 3-2. They're ranked 15th in the state against a 1-4 Newark Valley team. But it was 19-14 Tioga in the fourth quarter. It was not a Tioga's going to go in there and crush them. So both teams score on their first possessions. It's 7-7, and then by the end of the half. By the end of the first half, it was 19-7. Jake Brown, who had 157 rushing yards on 23 carries. He had two touchdowns of 8 yards and 15 yards right up the gut, like untouched. Like, no one wants to touch a guy like a freight train going forward. And then the very first play of the second half, the quarterback from Newark Valley goes a QB sneak goes 68 yards for a touchdown. It's 19-14, just like that. Then that was the last time Newark Valley scored. But Tioga wasn't really able to put the game away because they had some penalty issues, some holding calls, some false starts, whatever, like some stuff like that. And they had two fumbles that gave the ball right back to Newark Valley. So it took a bit longer for them to put the game away. In the fourth quarter, they finally did. Shea Bailey had a 4-yard run to make it 26-14. And then the first play of the next Newark Valley drive was a pick six by Jake Brown, like a 30 or 40 yard pick six, and it was 32-14, and that was a game. Yeah, it was the first division game for Tioga, and it was more so that they just took care of business. It wasn't pretty by any stretch of the imagination, but they did what they were supposed to do.
Okay, that sets up for a good one this coming Saturday with Waverly. We'll get into that as we break down our preview now. Let's start on the Pennsylvania side again. Athens is on the road at Muncie. Sayre also on the road at Canton. Tawanda, Logan, you said they're going to head to Tunkhannock. Hughesville, finally we get a home game here. Hughesville's going to come to Wyalusing. Troy, we said they're at Central Mountain. And then on Saturday, another good rivalry on the New York side. Waverly's going to be at Tioga Saturday night. I think that start time for kickoff is 7.
Believe so, yeah.
Where's everyone going to be?
I'm slated to be at Wyalusing this week. Like you said, the only kind of home game in the area. Yeah. Canton's going to play a home game, Sayre Canton. But the way it works out, I was in Canton last week, so I should be in Wyalusing this week. Other than that, I mean, I think Tunkhannock's just a little bit too far to get there and back on a football night and make the deadlines and not have everybody that puts our paper together at the end of the night very mad at me.
Right.
So I think I'll be in Wyalusing. And it's really a gotta-have-it spot for the Rams at this point in the year. So they were able to get back on the winning track against Canton a couple weeks ago. But then I think you really would have liked to have that game, a home game. It was your homecoming game against Athens. So,
and it's just been – the season's just been so up and down.
At 4-4, they're sitting at number 9 in District 2A – or in District 4A, Class 2A. District 4, Class 2A. That's more like it. So they're sitting at number 9 right now, right behind a South Williamsport team that edged them by a couple of points. That's also 4-4. So down the stretch – Hughesville, and then you got to go to Tawanda, who's sitting at number 2 right now, 6-2.
You need one of them.
And rolling at this point in the year. So we talked about it again. Kirk was a couple minutes behind getting here today, so Dave and I got to run through a lot of it. But you throw out everything for a rivalry game, but this Tawanda team looks like they could control their own destiny in terms of maybe not getting one, but maybe two home playoff games.
Certainly in the driver's seat, right?
So yeah, got to have it. I'll be in Wyalusing.
David?
I'll be at Tioga on Saturday night.
Good one. I might be there too. Surprise, surprise. Anybody got a read on Tunkhannock in terms of Tawanda going down there?
I don't know too much about them this year. I do remember that game was a big win in Tawanda's favor a year ago. So you'd like to think that.
Imagine it'd be the same, right?
It kind of goes the same way because you don't get that much turnover from year to year unless you have like a 15-man senior class. Well, Tawanda didn't graduate a senior last year. Maybe he had one senior last year, but really their contributions were from juniors and sophomores. So a lot of those guys are seniors this year. And like I said, they kind of control their own destiny. So if they show up and they play a good, clean football game, you'd like to think that they could leave on the winning side. That's the T-Bone Trophy rivalry. They play for the T-Bone, Tunkhannock and Towanda. So
got it. I don't mind that name. If you're looking for previews for this tonight's games and tomorrow, they're on stands now. David and Logan got you covered, and of course they got you covered with game coverage as well. So get a copy of the Morning Times on the Daily Review. Other local sports we want to touch on at all before we move on to national, guys?
I will touch. Sorry, I was just looking up Tunkhannock's record. According to Max Preps, they are 3-5 on the year, 1-3 in their conference. So
okay,
I don't see any games that would overlap. They just are coming off a 31-0 win over Montrose.
A little momentum.
Where I'll go is Monday this week, we had a game that had some huge league winning implications. It was Troy girls soccer and Athens girls soccer playing down in East Troy. And it was a good game. It kind of lived up to the billing of, like, hey, this is kind of for the league, because Troy was sitting in the first spot and Athens was right behind him. Troy wins it 2-1. Athens scored the first goal of the game with I think, just 9 minutes in. So it was early. There was some action. But then Troy responded, got a couple of goals, and that was the way it sat. With the win, Troy clinched its fifth straight NTL championship in girls soccer.
All right. So congratulations to Troy.
That was a good game. And we're taping on Wednesday, but they're going to have a rematch tonight. They're playing a home and home the way the schedule worked out. So
gotcha.
Other than that, last night I covered Tuesday night. It was just Towanda girls soccer's final game of the year. Saturday, just to bounce back real quickly, there was the NTL cross country invite, the coaches invite down in Rome. Athens Graham Wank wins the boys race. Yeah. And then it was Wellsboro's Lauren Kosick that won the girls race. But really just the kind of final kind of last gear up for the PI district championships, which are going to be not this week when you're listening to this, but the coming week.
All right, David.
On Tuesday, I was at Athens boys soccer, their last regular season game against Williamson. It was head coach Jake Lezak's final home game as head coach for Athens in 21 years. He's been the coach since 2003. He's moving on from coaching after the season. So it was his last home game, and Athens was up 1-0 for most of the game. And it was kind of suffered a bit of a heartbreaker with a Williamson goal with 8 seconds left in regulation to force overtime, and it turned into a 1-1 tie as no one scored in overtime. So it was kind of a tough end there, just because they thought they had it. They had a free kick with 30 seconds left from midfield. Athens did. So you're thinking, okay, that's probably it. And then somehow Williamson gets the ball to go the opposite direction, and they're able to get it one past the goalkeeper. So, yeah.
What were you guys doing in 2003?
Right now,
watching the Yankees lose to the Marlins in the World Series.
No, in 2003, right now, I was probably getting ready for a sectional playoff game in football, in high school football, where I would probably no doubt go on to break numerous records and become a star. No, I'm just kidding.
Is 2003 the year where you threw a touchdown pass on the dome?
No, that'd be 2004.
Okay.
2004, I did get an opportunity to play in the Carrier Dome, which was an awesome experience, and one of the reasons why I love getting to see guys like Waverly and Tioga go get that experience too, because what's cooler than getting to play in somewhere where you watch on TV and whatnot. So I hope to get to see someone like Waverly and Tioga back there again this year, because that is fun stuff to go to, and really excited to watch those kids. Let's go to October.
I was in preschool. I was starting preschool, by the way.
I was trying to get through that as quick as possible to feel as young as I could before you guys chimed in.
Third grade for me.
Yeah, so instead of toot my horn, what that really was me trying to just feel young while you guys chimed in. October baseball, though, you mentioned Yankees Marlins. I'm hoping for a little bit of a different outcome this season, because the New York Yankees take a commanding lead in the ALCS over the Guardians, 2-0 in that 7-game series, sitting pretty, not going to say anything to jinx it, voodoo in the air. I believe in that stuff, and I don't want to get my team in trouble, but I will say I like the way this has started. Yeah. You guys can elaborate a little more on it if you want, but I'm not gonna do anything but knock on wood that they continue to win.
Yeah, I walked into the office earlier and told Kirk, I was like, so I think the Yankees are going to the World Series, and he's like, no,
wouldn't talk about it. The other series I find pretty interesting, though. This Mets Dodgers thing is a combination of Dodgers having the scariest lineup in baseball and the Mets having about as much magic as a postseason team could get. Do you guys see the Mets hanging here, or you think the series will look more like that first game that the Dodgers handled pretty easily?
I think if it gets to seven you got to put the house on the Mets. Yeah, and gamble responsibly. That's just the way I'm going to phrase that. But like the magic, that would be the magic moment, right?
Sure.
And it's 1-1 right now, but I don't think they're going anywhere. In baseball, we were talking about it. It's a finicky game. It's right. It's whoever just gets hot during the 3-week stretch in October. But I don't know, David. I'll kick it off to him for that.
I don't have any rational thought about the NLCS because I do not want to see the Mets win.
Well, then let me ask you both this. What's the best World Series matchup for baseball?
Yankees-Dodgers.
Is it Yankees-Dodgers? Versus West?
It's 1A, 1B almost.
For baseball, it's Yankees-Mets.
Okay.
For ratings, it might also be Yankees-Mets. That's a good question. So I understand your point because we talked about this last week.
Yankees-Dodgers gives you the brand Yankees versus the brand Dodgers. It gives you East versus West. It gives you 1 versus 1. It gives you AL MVP versus NL MVP and lineup versus lineup. Yankees Mets gives you rivalry, the battle for New York, and the magic of what the Mets have shown and can it continue, and a bunch of other, like you said, kind of non-rating storylines, right? There's no way anyone wants to see Guardians-Dodgers, correct?
No. The Guardians are the team. Think about it. We're sitting here talking like they've already lost the series. It is 2-0. The Yanks got to win 4 to get it done. But I think all the storylines that are good start with the Yankees playing from the American League. One thing I'll just kind of ask you about because I asked David.
Yeah.
It's imagine how fun if you're just, let's say you're just a baseball fan that lives in New York. Like, imagine your week, right? If let's say you have some money to burn in your pocket. You could have gone to Game 1, Game 2 for the Yankees, and then the Mets are coming to town to play Game 3 and Game 4 in the NLCS. So if you're just, like, a baseball enjoyer, like, you're getting to watch as much postseason. Even if you're just watching it on your TV, just think about, like, when's the last time that the Yankees and the Mets have both been alive this late into the postseason?
2000. I can't remember. 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably it. It's probably been almost 25 years.
To bring that back. Yeah. I was in kindergarten back then.
Yeah, quarter century ago.
You don't want me to answer that part. But yeah, so I mean, that doesn't happen a lot.
No.
And in a sport like baseball where it's not like, and I guess championship games in football aren't at neutral sites, but like they're going to be in the city, right? And then we were even talking about it to the New York Liberty are playing in the WNBA finals right now. So a lot going on. And then I think the Giants were Sunday night football, and then the Jets were Monday night football.
That's the Bills. Like, that was all
the
Bills.
The New York was a very big focal point of weekend sports this past weekend.
But it's also Shohei on the Dodgers. Yes.
I was going to move on, but then you made me think of something when you said Shohei. I think I'm willing to admit, even as a Yankee fan and as a huge Aaron Judge fan, if it's your team playing either one of those teams and the game's on the line, who terrifies you more when they come to the plate? Ohtani or Judge?
Probably Shohei.
From what I've been watching, every time Ohtani comes to the plate, I'm thinking, something's going to happen.
Now Aaron Judge finally just hit a home run.
Hopefully it's a breakthrough, but man, every time Ohtani comes to the plate, it's like, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Philly Minute. I think we're heading football direction here, but I'll
be a little bit of a mix.
David, take center stage. 3, 2, 1. Go ahead, David.
The Nick Sirianni situation where he was yelling at fans after they won against Cleveland was just embarrassing. I don't know.
Strange, right?
It was very weird. And I understand why people outside of Philadelphia did not like Nick Sirianni to begin with. And I think we just all kind of tolerated it as Phillies fans because they're winning. And granted, they won on Sunday in very ugly fashion against the worst team in football. So I don't know. I'm tired of Sirianni and it still doesn't look right. And I think I said at the beginning of the year that if the Eagles go 500, then Sirianni's probably in trouble. Well, they're 3-2. And it's not pretty, and Sirianni might be in trouble.
What exactly did he say?
Do
we know?
Is it just the visual
of him going, yelling at the crowd?
I think he was mad at the fans booing him, and there were fire Sirianni chants.
That's where I kind of push back, is like, so it's okay for the fans to give him that, and then when the Eagles figured out and win a game, he can't give it back to y'all?
No, I get that, but not, he's like the only head coach to ever do that. So it's just, it's unbecoming of a head coach, is I guess maybe the best way to say it. But yeah, that's
heck of a way to debut that buzz cut.
Yeah. That was also strange.
And that is time.
All right.
We have a couple other minutes to get to here today. So this was, again, Kirk was AWOL for the first couple minutes of this normal taping session today. So we, David and I, got a hold of Johnny Williams, the tried and true Johnny Williams, Cowboys fan.
Our old friend.
We got the Cowboys minute, maybe minute and a half, 2 minutes from him. We got the state of the franchise from Johnny Williams' perspective. We talked about Jerry Jones and calling out radio hosts. So hopefully Jerry doesn't get wind of this podcast because he might try to shut us down too. So
I can only imagine.
That was pre-recorded before we sat down to tape the rest of everything today. So you'll hear that right here. Hey Johnny, thanks for calling in. We're not there yet, but we'll work you in. I'm calling to get the state of the Cowboys from you. It's week 7. It's been an up and down, turbulent year. Let's give me the Cowboy minute.
Dallas Cowboy minute. How much time do I get for that? Do I only get 76 seconds?
You get as much as Jerry Jones will let you have.
Fair enough. First off, thanks for reaching out to me, guys. It's good to pop back on the podcast again, but unfortunately, there's been nothing but black clouds over the Dallas Cowboys fanhood these days. From being on the media side of it, it's kind of insane that Jerry had an all-time bad day on Tuesday, blown up on a radio host, kind of doubling down on it later on. I don't know if you guys caught up with
that
later on. He doubled down on it pretty much.
I saw that last night. That was crazy to me.
Yeah, so like, being on that, and you guys know as well as I do, being probably even better than I do, being in that situation, it's just, man, like, what do you do with that? And from my perspective, from a fan perspective, and you guys know I've been out on the Cowboys this year, nothing could make me more spitefully happy than to see Jerry Jones have an all-time breakdown like that over the course of a 24-hour period.
Yeah, absolutely. So where are we at with the Cowboys? 3-3? Two and four?
Yep. 3-3.
We're 3-3. We're entering the bye this coming week. And while most teams are, you know, especially as you approach a bye week, maybe you make some staffing changes. Maybe you make a trade. Maybe you get some roster changes. And we just have Jerry Jones having meltdowns on public radio saying how good of a job he's doing and how we still like our guys.
I got one more Cowboys question related for you. How are we feeling about Mr. Prescott?
I'm still pretty high on Prescott. I feel bad for him.
Yeah,
this isn't like I'm not going to sit here and say he's like an MVP caliber player so far this season, like you know, like he was last year, in my opinion. But to me, it's hard when he's one of the only guys that seems to be showing up, and when he presses, he has a history of not performing well when he presses.
Yeah,
when he tries too hard, when he tries to play hero ball, and it's rearing its ugly head because he got guys with no separation. We have no running game. Offensive line's not giving a ton of time. Our defense, you see, is all-time atrocious. I think this is one of the worst four-game home stretches defensively in NFL history, let alone Cowboys history. So it is tough times. I guess it's much better being a Bills, Ravens, and Eagles fan these days, although I'm not sure David is super fond of Sirianni.
Johnny, I was just about to say, I have a confession to you, and it's that I also do not like Nick Sirianni.
He's a very difficult man to like.
Yes. It's easier when they're winning, but yeah.
Yeah, so at least you guys, the flip side is at least you guys can change that. You guys can actually fire Nick Sirianni. I'm stuck with Jerry Jones for the rest of his natural life.
That is true.
So it still looks better. Even if the Eagles were 2-4 at a lesser record, it would still be brighter pastures over there as far as I'm concerned.
So that was Johnny Williams. You remember him. That was our version, I guess, of the Cowboys Minute. Thank you, Johnny, for calling in.
And it's been an absolute blast, guys. Don't hesitate to have me on again. Maybe the news will be a bit better next time, but then I doubt you'll have me on.
So, yeah, that was Johnny Williams. It was good to get him back on the phone.
Good to hear, my old pal.
I think he appreciated being on the call with us. I think he said he doesn't. The blue collar works maybe not for him. He misses being able to do this with us, but that's life, right?
I am not a Cowboys fan, but I am a fan of diehard Cowboy fans, and he is as tried and true of the blue and silver as it gets, and you can hear it in that interview.
There are only about two diehard Cowboy fans that I am a fan of, and it's Johnny Williams and my cousin.
He's absolutely one of them.
My favorite is when I'll see him online, and just he'll put in quotes, "We like our guys," which I guess is something Jerry Jones said at the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
Just whenever something bad happens. I said we have a couple of minutes, because before we get on to whatever the next big topic is, I might be a transplant doing this, and it might be wrong coming from me. I need to do the Yinzer minute for a second.
Oh,
the Pittsburgh Yinzer
minute.
Wow.
You're wearing black and yellow.
I put the yellow hoodie on today. It's a Terps hoodie, but I grew up in Baltimore, grew up watching the Ravens. But
what's
like,
this going to be?
I need to talk about something. So if someone wants to put me on the clock, you can give me 76 seconds. I don't know a good time for
Pittsburgh. What would a Yinzer minute be?
But I don't have an accent. I didn't practice an accent. I thought that would be bad taste, but... If you guys want to put me on the clock, I can
I'm
go.
I'm just excited to see what the heck this is about.
So I was going to just commandeer the entire Philly minute from you, but then I thought that would be rude. So I let you have your Philly minute, but.
Let me get you on here. All right, go ahead.
I need to know what is going on in Pittsburgh. It came out this week that Russell Wilson's healthy enough to be the starter, and he's going to take first team reps. Justin Fields just went 4-2, and just coming off of a. Maybe it's not slop. Maybe it is not pretty. Maybe it's sloppy. But coming off a win over the Raiders, that was convincing every step of the way. And I know that Mike Tomlin said you don't want to see how the hot dog's made. You might not like it. I get all that. That makes sense to me. But I pulled it up just to make sure. In the last six games that he started, he's thrown over 50% in every game. He's at least 100 yards passing, which these aren't groundbreaking numbers, but he's also giving you rushing numbers. Last game, he had 11 rushes for 59 yards and two touchdowns to go with 145 yards passing on 14 of 24 attempts. I'm not saying he's Patrick Mahomes. I'm not saying he's Joe Burrow. I'm not saying he's Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying he's Josh Allen. But how can you take the keys out of this guy's hand? Because it came into the year, it was a competition, and now Russell Wilson got hurt. It put him behind the eight ball, but now he's just healthy, and you're going to bring him back on. What is going on? How do you take the ball out of his hands?
Is this week the first time he's been cleared to play?
As far as I know. Okay. And so he started to take first team reps. The calf is healthy.
I guess the argument is that, like, if Russell Wilson was healthy in time for the Dallas game, maybe they would have pulled out that win against Dallas. But it's hard to fight against a 4-2.
The problem is this. The only positive is all of a sudden they go from a really good 4-2 football team to the favorite to win the Super Bowl, because the flip side is this is nothing but disaster. If this goes wrong, you're a worse football team. Yeah. You lose the game. And Justin Fields now, why do I have any interest in going back on that field after you just decided at 4-2?
Well, that's what I can't figure out either, because if you guys remember, at the beginning of the year, they were talking about, like, oh, yeah, we might throw him out there on kickoff team, like, with the new dynamic kickoff. Like, and then he just was the starter for the first 6 weeks of the year, led the team to a 4-2 record. Yeah, they lost to Dallas. Yeah, they lost to Indianapolis. But those were three-point losses. Yeah. I have to say this is tongue-in-cheek because the Raiders did beat the Ravens, but, like, I don't think the Raiders are some world-beating domination football team, but they went out west, a road game, and won 32-13. Like, yeah. I just don't understand how, and yes, Justin Fields is probably not, to Steelers brass, the future quarterback, but why couldn't he have been? And if you do this now, if you go out there and start Russell, maybe behind closed doors, everybody's cool with it, but... Now, from a sports watching perspective, it makes no sense to me.
Now, you sound mad about it, but you're also probably very excited inside.
I don't have any hard feelings about the Steelers, because this era, while Lamar Jackson has killed the NFC, has played pretty well against Joe Burrow, and the Bengals has really had his way against the Browns. For some reason, the Steelers are like the Big Bad Wolf. I've used that reference already.
Yeah, just a fantastic defense. Yeah.
They always seem to get the better of the Ravens, but it hasn't mattered because they haven't been in heavy postseason contention in recent years as well.
I just don't
understand.
It
screams dissension. It screams blow up in your face.
And
you're in a way better position than people anticipated with this team at 4-2 to make this type of decision. And to do it, what's going to happen is they're going to play Sunday night against a Jets team that has a lot of excitement to right the ship right now.
I'm sick of them, too. We don't need to do the New York Jet minute, but...
If you're the Jets, okay, we got rid of the coach we don't want. Oh, we bring in Devontae Adams. At least there's some excitement there, and the Steelers have got to be ready for it.
I just have never... I get it, it's Aaron Rodgers. I get it, he's going to be first ballot Hall of Famer whenever he hangs up the helmet, but hangs up the cleats, but... It just feels like he's calling the shots. And now, Devontae Adams is a great wide receiver. Don't get me wrong. If you can make that move, you go make it. But it feels like someone said it on a different podcast I was listening to. I can't recall which one it was, but just like they're pressing different buttons.
Yeah.
Fire the head coach button. Mm-hmm. Go get Devontae Adams this work, button.
Right.
It might not have been the best AFC East receiver upgrade.
That's what
I was going to say.
Way to tee us up.
I got four notes here. We touched on Russ over Fields. We just touched on Adams going from the Raiders to the Jets and reuniting with Rodgers. Next on the list, Amari Cooper is now a Buffalo Bill. It's going to be for the remainder of this year. They're only going to owe him $807K.
Wow, that's really good.
Should I go get him in fantasy?
Yeah, because, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's shown potential to be a true number one. Allen's desperate for a true number one, and it only adds to a Bills team that, despite all the injuries, despite the quote-unquote lack of weapons, is still sitting at 4-2. They only get better. They didn't give up somebody. They didn't, you know, cut the cost of the team or anything. They simply upgraded with a number one receiver.
Well, that's the thing. Is the Jets and Devontae Adams feels like it's just another band-aid that they're trying to put on the team that's been off to a bad start.
Right.
The Bills are playing pretty good, and they just got a real upgrade.
Who has very numbers on par with Devontae this year and doing it with Deshaun Watson and that terrible Browns team. He's got to be excited. He goes from the Browns to a contender and an MVP caliber quarterback. This is nothing but a home run for the Bills. And I'm excited because to get to 4-2, the way this team's set up right now with all the injuries, and to get him now at this time, nothing but excitement if you're a Bills fan, I think.
I'd be excited. I mean, it's Khalil Shakir's been their leading receiver. Yeah.
He gets to go back to kind of being, you can't double team him now. He gets to kind of go back to working that slot and that medium distance.
I get concerned because Keon Coleman was my first round draft pick in my fantasy dynasty this year. So he's probably going to take a little bit of a step back for this year at least.
But from some exciting news to some unfortunate news, bad Aiden Hutchinson injury. It sounds like, though, he broken tibia for Aiden Hutchinson in the game this past weekend. That's the bad news. The good news is after surgery, the doctors seem to think there's no reason he shouldn't be back and ready for the opening week in 2025. So, gruesome looking.
Yeah.
A break is a break, but it sounds like this isn't a Alex Smith something awful career-changing situation. It sounds like they were able to do a really good job in surgery, and he's going to be okay going forward.
What a weird Sunday for the Lions fans.
Yeah.
You just destroy Dallas in Dallas, but you're arguably your best player.
Agreed.
I saw the score of that one late, and I could not believe it.
Unreal. All right, and we'll end with the locks. I think everybody won.
Who'd I pick? I don't think I won.
Oh, I picked the Eagles.
I think you had Bengals, right?
Oh, I did. I picked the Bengals. Yeah. Had to have
Bengals win, Eagles win, and then I had the Texans over the Patriots. Okay. So we all get the W. I'm 2-0. David's 2-0. Logan improves to 1-1. My lock to get us out of here is Buffalo. Home, Tennessee. Amari Cooper. Excitement in the air. 4-2. Everything's clicking. They get a game from the Jets that they probably shouldn't have, and now you get to come home with, like I said, a lot of excitement and momentum. I think the Bills roll a really bad Titans team. My lock for week 7 is the Buffalo Bills. Logan.
Okay, I'm going to give you this one. You'll know when you listen Monday or Friday morning whether it came true or not. My lock of the week is the Broncos over the Saints in New Orleans. Okay. Sean Payton returned to the
revenge game.
And that 2-0 Saints start, not good.
Well, so that game was really weird Sunday, and I was more so just like watching on the ticker at the bottom of the screen. It was almost like 24-0 Bucks, and then somehow it was 27-24 Saints. The final score that I saw later in the day, it was like 51-27. And the Saints are starting Spencer Rattler right now. Yep. Like it's a transition for them. I think they can still play well. And I don't think the Broncos have been exactly world beaters, but come on, Sean Payton is not going to lose this football game. No. So I'm going to take the Broncos over the Saints Thursday night.
Okay. David.
I think the most lockable game of the week is Buffalo over Tennessee.
All right.
Just everything you just said.
Absolutely. A lot of momentum there. I'm excited, and please get out this weekend and support the local sports. We're running out of time in a great fall season. We're near the end. Every chance you can get, nice crisp fall air, go to the Jolly Farmer, get yourself some coffee, some load up on all the good things that fall brings, including high school sports, and get out and support them. Support us, please.
Before you close us out, just one programming note. We're anywhere you can get your podcast for the most part.
Yes.
Apple, Spotify, if you have an iPhone, you have Apple Podcasts already, just search us up on there. We're going to transition to just not running it through the website as much. It's easier for our analytics that way. So anywhere typically you get your podcast. If you want it on Amazon and you can't find it, reach out to me. I'll figure out how to get it on there for you. So anywhere you get your podcast.
Phones, laptops, section. You name it. Jolly Farmer, one more time for me, Logan, before we get everyone out of here.
Today's podcast is being brought to you by the Jolly Farmer Convenience Store. When you think about convenience, think about the Jolly Farmer in Waverly. From the supersized selection of microbrewery beers to the bakery and even grocery items, lottery tickets, and that pick-me-up cup of coffee or hot chocolate, they have it all for you. I can't vouch that they actually have hot chocolate. That's making a mass assumption by me. But you visit the Jolly Farmer, 7 Elizabeth Street in Waverly. It's open 7 days a week.
Get yourself a copy of the Morning Times. Get yourself a copy of the Daily Review and go enjoy some wonderful high school football this weekend. We'll see you next week.